Hello there, this is Mark Bauerlein for another conversation. Today we have Dr. Tricia Bruce, who is a sociologist. She's at Maryville College now. She's a sociologist of religion. She's a prolific author and researcher. I'll mention some of the books that she has done. She's authored Parish and Place, Organizing Diversity in Contemporary American Catholicism. She co-edited a volume with a topical title here, Polarization in the U.S. Catholic Church. She is also the author of Faithful Revolution, How Voice of the Faithful is Changing the Church. And there are many research articles that she has published as well as being a voice in the public square on issues of Catholicism and you know, social change, demographic change, among other things. So welcome, Dr. Bruce.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. You know, I noticed, I have to say this, you went to college in Georgetown, Texas.
I did.
At Southwestern. Then you went to graduate school at UCSB, University of California, Santa Barbara. I did kind of a similar run from you know, the Maryland suburbs, out to Del Mar, California to wrap up high school. Pretty big culture change there, huh?
It is. But, you know, I am actually a military brat, too. So my dad was in the Army. And through that, I got used to moving around quite a bit. So I think culture change became kind of the name of my game for some time. But yeah, growing up in Texas and going to California and then D.C. after that, and now in Tennessee, I've gotten a taste of lots of different regional cultures in the U.S.
Okay. And so, yeah, D.C., yeah, certainly is a culture all its own.
That's right.
especially these days, we're trying to figure it all out. Just what's happening there. You know, I wrapped up at UCLA, and every once in a while I would drive up to Santa Barbara because I could stay with people up there. And I used to like to go study and read in the library and just look out over the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, the question is usually, how do students get anything done with such a landscape? But in fact, it is possible with a beautiful view in the background, for sure.
So anyway, you have a nice, interesting article that I thought I would begin with that a lot of our listeners can certainly relate to. It was in the annual review of the Sociology of Religion. And it's entitled Cultural Catholics in the United States. And it opens with data on a lot of negative trends that we find among Catholics, including declining church attendance and declining birth rates. And at the end of that opening, you say, quite reasonably, today's United States of America is, in short, trending less Catholic. Well, yeah, it's what you just said. But then comes your next comment, or, ... is it? So you want to rehearse your little reversal there with the evidence and what you found maybe let's begin with a definition of cultural Catholic. What is cultural Catholicism?
Sure. Well, this is a new area, and really, I think it needs so much more exploration than what we already have. But one of the attempts to try to understand this and the data that I drew from especially was a survey of U.S. Catholics that was done by the Pew Research Center in fall of 2015. And they were trying to get a little bit creative in terms of better understanding Catholic identity and the impact of Catholic affiliation among Americans, because typically we ask folks, well, are you Catholic? Are you not? A next layer to that might be, were you Catholic at one point? Which actually does tell us a lot, because fully half of U.S. adults who were raised in the Catholic faith actually subsequently leave Catholicism at some point. So it tells us something too if folks have the ex-Catholic affiliation. But then the question is raised too about, well, what about those Americans or others who have maybe no longer have a religious affiliation or a tie? They wouldn't self-identify religiously as Catholic, but they have some Catholic connection. So this particular Pew study, if someone said no, they were not currently Catholic by religion, then the follow-up question in this was, do you currently consider yourself Catholic or partially Catholic in any way or not? We're talking self-identity. We're not talking theology. You know, it raises all sorts of interesting theological questions. But sociologically, it says that, in fact, you know, looking at the folks who said, yes, I do consider myself Catholic or partially Catholic in some way, that this actually encompasses a, I think, surprising swath of the U.S. population. If you look just at the sample that Pew found from this particular survey that they ran, some 9% of Americans, or almost 1 in 10 Americans, consider themselves Catholic or partially Catholic in a way. Again, not religiously, but in some other way. So my attempt with this particular article that you described is to try to get behind that. You know, what is it? And I think we've all had conversations with colleagues or friends or family members where they say, oh, you know, I'm not Catholic anymore, or maybe they'll say something like, well, once Catholic, always Catholic, but I don't go to Mass, or I don't, you know, I'm not sacramentally compliant or otherwise. And it opens up this broader conversation about Catholicism, but I think also religion in a broader sense. You know, we hear a lot about secularization, but it might be that religion is changing and morphing, and that goes to the level of self-identity for folks who still feel this kind of connection, even if they don't hold that formal religious affiliation.
Does their cultural Catholicism bear upon just the fact that, well, my parents were Catholic, or I went to a Catholic school, an elementary school, I was confirmed in the church once? What is the appeal? Is it a positive appeal? I mean, are they happy to say I'm partially Catholic? Are they holding on to something deliberately? What did you find there? I mean, maybe this calls for speculation, right? Beyond the data, but.
Exactly. You know, there are some clues that we can distill from the data that's there. And again, I think also further questions that would be worth exploring. But, you know, for one, these are folks who do retain some kind of Catholic connection that they admit and they own. There was also the option, of course, to say, no, I'm no longer Catholic. I have no Catholic connection. So I think implicitly there's this feeling of, okay, maybe there's some kind of affinity. And in fact, cultural Catholics were asked to describe a little bit more about what they meant, or what is it that ties you in this lingering way to Catholicism. And they give a variety of reasons for this. You know, for some, it's general Christian beliefs or practices. You know, we shouldn't think of cultural Catholics as folks who are not Catholic and not anything else. In fact, many of them are something else in terms of their religious affiliation. So they might feel that tie to Catholicism still because their current faith practice has some overlap in terms of, you know, belief or scripture or otherwise. Many of them describe that they like or admire or respect the church or Pope Francis. Others talk about how they like the liturgy and the worship and other aspects of the service, so that ritual component of Catholicism is meaningful to them. Some of them talk about how they have ties to the sacraments. You know, maybe they got married in the church, and while they don't consider themselves Catholic anymore, they still feel that tie, or perhaps they were baptized in the Catholic Church. And yes, some have these real strong institutional ties. So maybe they went to Catholic schools growing up. Maybe they went to a Catholic university. So the institutional piece plays into why they may no longer identify as Catholic too. For some people, many of them nonetheless talk about organizational or institutional ties as being part of the reason why they still consider themselves Catholic. And then beyond that, too, another category would be family. So either a spousal connection, you know, maybe their spouse is Catholic, maybe their parents are Catholic, or they have an ancestry connection that makes them feel like, you know, it's in some ways almost an ethnic identity as much as it is a religious identity, one that they feel like doesn't come off. You know, it's a part of who they are as a person.
Right. Well, here's a question. The more speculation for you. You know, I was baptized a Catholic, but my parents, you know, got caught up in the '60s. Well, we'll just put it that way. And I didn't. My brother and I, we didn't have any religious instruction. My sister went to Catholic school. Older sister went to Catholic schools, but we didn't. And so we never had any any kind of formal education. We didn't go to church very much either, and I became, you know, atheistic and secular and all the other things that happen to late teenagers so often when they read too much Nietzsche. But then in middle age, really, when I got married and we had a child, that actually was one of the big turns for me toward getting back into the church. And in fact, my son's experience in church, in a Catholic church, was an important thing. I think the liturgy, when he was very little, got to him.
Right,
it seemed
right,
like a absolutely. Natural process. And so if you look at those who consider themselves partially Catholic, they want to hold on to elements of Catholicism, even if they have gone elsewhere or different direction. Do you think that they want to pass on that partiality, if not full-fledged Catholicism, at least the elements that retain with them to their kids?
Right. Yeah, that raises a whole host of questions. In part, you know, you ask about desire and whether folks want to pass that on. I think another big piece of it is the tools to pass it on. You know, even among Catholics who do self-identify currently as practicing Catholics religiously, oftentimes the formation of adults, and sociologists have observed this, their formation is weak, and so it makes it difficult for them to teach their own kids what Catholicism is. So it raises a different question too about, well, what happens in this generational turn, right? Because a lot of cultural Catholics are Catholic culturally because they were raised Catholics. In some ways, this is ironic because you could say, well, was this failed socialization, meaning, you know, raised Catholic but no longer Catholic? Or is it successful in the sense of being raised Catholic and yet, you know, taking a different path, but still the resilience of that identity and that connection and that, oh, you know, whether it's preference for the poor or consideration of solidarity or other Catholic ideas, perhaps being persistent for them. But it is, I think, for me, one of the big questions about what the future looks like, because generationally, being culturally Catholic is more common among younger Americans, later generation Americans. And these folks are the same folks who are waiting longer to get married, who are waiting longer to have children if they do at all, and might make different decisions about parenting. So while cultural Catholicism is in many ways on the rise, given this generational legacy that you described through your own experience and that of your parents, it may be on the decline moving forward if cultural Catholicism doesn't effectively pass to the next generation.
Right. In fact, the persistence of cultural Catholicism may actually not the next generation may not have it because they're not full Catholics when they're young, and so you're not going to have that turn away from their more strict church adherence and so forth. But maybe the positive side here, what you mentioned here, is it's not a failed, we might look at it at half full, not a failed socialization or failed commitment, but actually the retention of elements of Catholicism that got in there when they were young, and either they're stuck, or people don't want to give those up. And I think the question this would pose for the church, for the evangelization, and would be, is there something in this lingering cultural Catholicism that offers the church an opportunity to build itself, to reverse some of the directions of the nuns, to slow that process? I mean, one of the remarkable stats that you brought up at the beginning of your essay was that 50% of people raised Catholic leave, at least temporarily.
Yes, right.
Sometimes temporarily. 50, you lose 50%? Wow.
Yeah.
But if the cultural Catholicism lingers, that the church should recognize that, maybe act differently in terms of evangelization? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
there are lots of moments of, I guess, hope in terms of, you know, thinking about from a perspective of evangelization, if you put on that hat per se, which is to say that cultural Catholics, by way of example, are more likely than others to say that they would be open to potentially returning to the church at some point. Now, of course, many may not, may never will. But Pew asked them this question directly too, and cultural Catholics were more open to that. And I think too, there's this more subtle interpretation back to this idea of what might be thought of as almost the diffusion of the faith, or the possibility that Catholicism, well, you know, it's been relatively steady in terms of a population trend of Americans over a number of decades. It's slightly going down now. This is a trend we're keeping an eye on as sociologists. But
those millennials.
Exactly. The millennials and the Gen Z, you know, it's coming. So what does that mean? But I think also, you know, cultural Catholicism opens a conversation to say, hey, it's not just this hard line where you're in the church, you're out of the church. But maybe there's this blurred space in between that actually has a huge impact, both in terms of self-identity and connection and philosophy or voting or pro-social behavior. And then maybe even on a broader landscape, too, when you think about cities and communities, what does cultural Catholicism look like in cities? And this is one of the questions I've been asking for another book project I've been working on recently too. And I think it potentially has a negative spin, but I think it potentially has a very positive spin in terms of the massive impact that Catholicism has on this country and beyond.
Do you think cultural Catholicism, you mentioned social beliefs, are there, is there in the world of education or of the arts, and music that might be identified with some of these people with cultural Catholicism or calling themselves still partially Catholic, that does have to do with, you know, I loved walking into that cathedral. It was beautiful inside. You know, when I came back into the church, it was up on Lexington Avenue and 65th in St. Vincent Ferrer. I loved the incense. Yeah. I love the state, the architecture and the liturgy. It did its work on me, and that it wasn't really doctrinal. I know it's doctrinal when you get down to it, but I didn't experience it initially as doctrinal. I experienced it as beauty, and sobriety, solemnity, the hush inside that was a. That could be part of the culture of Catholicism that might exert an appeal on people.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And of course, you know, the challenge that sociologists have is that stuff's really hard to measure. You know, it's hard to empirically observe. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about recently relates to that in the sense that, you know, I'm trying to understand as the Catholic Church and diocese in particular have had to make decisions about closing parishes, suppressing parishes, and closing actual church buildings, you know, what is the fate of those buildings? What happens to that space? And so that feeling that you describe of walking into a church, a literal church building, and having that sense of enduring connection to religion, to faith, to Catholicism in particular. And so the question with some of these spaces, I think, raises this question too of, well, what is the meaning of Catholicism or religion to an increasingly non-affiliated American public? And if you use the example of churches, you know, what do communities or neighbors say about that church that had this, you know, really prominent role in the community for generations and now has been sold by a diocese out of, you know, financial need or a variety of reasons, and a developer or someone else is going to be making a decision about that building. So then what feeling do you have when you walk by it and it's either gone, it's been razed, or you walk by it and it's become a retail establishment, or it's become a residential condo, which has happened to a number of former churches in this country, including, You know, there's a beautiful new high rise that opened in Boston this year in an old German Catholic parish. But what is that a feeling of loss? Or is that a feeling of gain? And how does, you know, how do religious leaders think about this? And how do others in the public think about this? Again, especially those back to the cultural Catholicism identity, especially those who have that identity or whose grandfather, you know, went to this church, even if they don't identify anymore.
I can't imagine not walking by that and feeling the loss, the desecration. I mean, just as an experience, just, you know, viscerally. Okay, let me move on to another article you wrote. This is I'm going through your CV.
Okay, there you go.
So this one is called "A Pope, a People, and a Parish: How Changing Demographics Are Changing Catholic Communities." And in that article, you begin again with data. This is in the journal Liturgy, and you begin with a lot of data. That shows a remarkable global shift, right, in the church. You said that early 20th century Catholics, two-thirds of the Catholic Church was in Europe, the membership in Europe. Now it's just down to one-quarter. What a tremendous, tremendous shift. And while the global population has sort of changed, has pretty much stayed the same, the shift into the South, right? Latin America now makes up 39% of the Catholic Church. Africa and the Middle East is 17%, and Asian Pacific, you know, the Far East, was only 5% of the church in 1910. It's now 12% in 2010. Is you know, I don't think you mentioned it in the United States. Do you know?
I do have that. Yes, in the United States, we've had some pretty substantial demographic changes among American Catholics as a whole. You know, we're pretty racially and ethnically diverse lot. So right now, about 6 in 10 Catholic adults are white, mm-hmm. About a third are Latino, and then smaller proportions, somewhere between 3 and 6%, identify as Black or African American, Asian American, or other racial and ethnic groups.
Okay. Well, now that shift, you call it a tectonic shift in the regional makeup of Catholics is part of what was behind or related to the election of Pope Francis. But if you can say just broadly in this essay, what is your some big conclusions about how demographics are changing Catholic communities?
Yeah. Well, you know, you have the changes from the bottom up and the changes from the top down. You know, from the bottom up, of course, you have these communities of Catholics now forming in very creative ways that are synthesizing traditions that are brought from around the world, potentially. I mean, if you look at, for example, the percentage of foreign-born American Catholics at this point, it's actually higher than it's ever been, which might be surprising. So you have a number of traditions coming from particularly Latin America and Asia that are now morphing what's happening in the Catholic Church here. You know, today, by way of example, is Our Lady of Guadalupe, the common celebration that is celebrated by a number of Mexican Catholics in particular. So a lot of parishes throughout the United States are going to be hosting large parades and festivities that honor and celebrate the Virgin Mary from this particular perspective. So from the ground up, you know, you have lay Catholics kind of reinterpreting and bringing in their own liturgical practices, food, family practices, and whatnot to change what the church looks like. From the top down, I think it's created many challenges for the U.S. church and U.S. church leaders and bishops in particular to try to understand how to respond to diversity from within. So how are parishes structured? How do you accommodate so many different Catholics who diverge not only along racial lines, but also along the lines of class and economics and education and social need and generation and the like. And bishops have used different responses for this. You know, we have in the United States, of course, and throughout the world, the still prevalent form of the parish system is territorial. So, you know, where you live technically, canonically, tells you where you go to church, much like a polling zone or a school district. Your residence shapes your attendance. Now, that said, of course, a lot of Catholics choose where they want to go, and oftentimes those choices are driven by the desire to be around others who are similar to them. You know, Americans tend to congregate in homophilous groups, right? Birds of a feather flock together. And that happens in parishes. Now, again, from the top down, what this means is that lay Catholics are breaking the rules, technically. And again, some bishops don't mind, but others have actually responded in part to that puzzle or that irony by creating an alternative to the territorial parish system, which is by creating personal parishes. This is actually a topic that was the core question behind my book, Parish in Place. And personal parishes, rather than being driven by territory, are driven by purpose. So you have personal parishes for particular ethnic groups, or you have personal parishes for even the traditional Latin Mass, or personal parishes oriented towards social justice, or for young Catholics. And so it's a way for the Catholic Church to say, formally, structurally, to create structures that accommodate and serve the particular needs of some Catholics, rather than assuming that the territorial parish can serve the needs of everyone, because the church is so diverse.
The acceptance of the personal parish is the evidence that this actually helps sustain the population of the church?
It's hard. I know this like a classic academic response, right? But yeah, I mean, here's someone, I literally wrote a whole book on it, and I still at the end kind of, you know, but the argument is that it's really positive in the sense that it helps to maintain and retain Catholics, because that social bond, you know, that cultural capital that we get from being around others like ourselves, is actually going to be more likely to keep you in the church. So that's a big argument for it. And if you talk about, you know, if we look at, for example, Asian American Catholics, you know, there, or, you know, take any example. So Korean Catholics, you know, there may be a handful of Korean Catholics in a given parish, and they may never feel like they have ownership of a territorial parish if they're in the minority, or there may never be time for their particular celebrations or the things that are meaningful to them as Catholics. Whereas the personal parish model and the term national parish may be more familiar to some of your listeners. This is the older term, but this is a space that then feels like home. All right, so that's the argument, but it inherently divides, right? It fragments. And so that's why I hedge, just because even if it provides all of these goods, it also then splits Catholics up, right? And it codifies the very parish choosing that Catholics are already doing.
Yeah, I have friends in Atlanta. I go down to Atlanta and teach, lived there for a long time, who I was told the church he was going to had the long-serving priest retire, and a new leadership came in, and he actually it was quite a big change in the nature of the leadership and the focus of things, the orientation of liturgy and the content of much of the homily. And he stopped going to that church, and he went to another church, which wasn't too far away. But it was a little farther from his house. But he went to another church, and he's happy. He was unhappy in the liturgy. He didn't want to. He doesn't want to leave Catholicism. But there was another option for him, and he really likes the church. And this and he's got kids, and he's bringing them up in the church. So I think from what I've seen, sort of the personal parish might be a way for the laity to communicate the things that matter to them, and sort of voting with your feet can often have a sobering influence on perhaps the complacency that can set in on the leadership.
Yeah, there's something to be said for for choice. And we know, of course, American Catholics especially have a penchant for choice, right? And also for either, you know, call it dissenting or call it non-assenting on a variety of you know, tenets of faith practice in particular. But these choices then, yeah, do act back on the church and create a more, as you could call it, participatory environment, and the sense of, especially at the local level, you know, when you talk about parishes, like that's where people experience their faith. That's what, you know, for a lot of people, that's what being Catholic is, you know, it's going to church at 10 a.m. on Sunday. It's the music, it's the priest, it's the potluck afterwards. And sometimes that feels so wholly apart from these broader, you know, politicized environments around hot button issues. You know, that's not what is on a lot of American Catholics' minds. They want to just feel at home with others like them. So it does, I think, do much by way of connecting Catholics to each other, even if it's, you know, imperfect and dividing them from others who are dissimilar from themselves.
Right. And for me, it's very important to walk into church and feel that home feeling. There, it's a different kind of home. But to experience that is one of the things that draws me in and holds me there and makes me value it. So we'd like to get you in the magazine, Dr. Bruce, to talk about some of these issues. And I'm going to talk with you about that in the future, but I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for the conversation. Really enjoyed it, Mark.